RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Friday morning, political panel time here at RCR. And I want to welcome in Olivia Pearson. Hi, Olivia.
Good morning, fellas.
I bet you have been excited as hell this week.
Oh, it's been such a great week. It's been good.
Such a great week.
You know, since the weekend, that was, you know, rough. But since then, it's been great.
Epic week. Glenn Inwood is back with us. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me back. Yes, it's been a huge week, hasn't it?
Huge. Yeah, we need a bigger word than that. And Cam Slater. Hi, Cam.
Good morning, everybody.
All right. Do you think we should start on maybe Trump?
Why not?
Who wants to? Olivia, I think you get the first call on this one.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
That's all right.
Yeah. Okay, so Where does one start? Almost speechless. Look, I want to talk about Hanlon's razor as a heuristic or rule of thumb to help people reason and judge things. Hanlon's razor says, never attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity or incompetence.
So this is cock-up versus conspiracy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're talking about the Secret Service, right?
Well, think about how many people assumed that Jacinda was incompetent in order to explain away the sheer level of wickedness she used to govern through the COVID pandemic. I heard this a lot. Oh, it's incompetence. It's incompetence. Oh, it's stupidity. It wasn't stupidity, and it was not incompetence. There was an agenda of malice behind her, and she was implementing it very effectively. That's what I believe. So when it comes to this assassination attempt on Trump last weekend, we're now hearing a tsunami of reports and commentary about the failure of the Secret Service, the police and other law enforcement around that whole terrible event. Same thing. I don't think it was stupidity, nor was it incompetence. I believe it was an intentional assassination attempt on Trump, which didn't work, thank God. So it's now been confirmed that the shooter was flagged as suspicious 3 hours before Trump was shot. 3 hours.
It took his own ladder to the place.
And a rifle.
Yeah.
So he had a rangefinder and was wandering around the building and climbing over rooftops. Then he was flagged as a credible threat minutes before the shooting. And Trump was never told to get off the stage. All that can only happen if a stand down order from higher up had been given. So,
there can be a bit of cock up in there, Olivia, because what I read yesterday is that building that Crooks was on top of, the police were using it as a staging place with people inside.
Inside.
Right? So the snipers in the Overwatch positions on those two buildings behind Trump, they would know that there was their guys in that building, right? And so they would line up on this guy. And you could see that they were lining up on this guy, but all of a sudden they're going, hang on a second, there's our guys in that building. Is that one of ours? And then that delay from when he was on top of it doesn't account for the 3 hours and then the 30 minutes and then the immediate 3 minutes before. But it does account for a delay in counter-sniper activity because they're going, well, that building's got our guys in it. Is that one of our guys on the roof? All of a sudden, that thought process now leads to a 20.
It sort of trips people up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But after everything that we've seen Trump go through, the pure malice from the Democrat and sometimes Republican sides have actually, they've been such a feature, as Marty would say, it's not a bug, it's a feature. And assassination was their last option to prevent him from becoming president. Not that we're quite there yet, but it looks like we're going to be. So was it malice or stupidity? If we use another heuristic, Occam's razor, the simplest explanation is usually the correct one. Because it makes the fewest assumptions and apply it to this situation, it's definitely malice. And it means the upper echelons of the security and intelligence blob tried to kill Trump. And what happened cannot anyway be explained by saying, it cannot be adequately explained by stupidity, but it can by malice. So I'm coming down on that side. And even when you think about the fumbling women, Lindsay called them in his Perrigo perspective.
Poor to lose.
And fumbling Thumbelinas with their holsters and all. The fact that the shooter was... The fact that the shooter was on top of a building so close and got off a volley of shots before he was taken out, the complete and total failure to alert Trump that there was a significant threat in the grounds, let alone a person of suspicion, all that so-called stupidity and so-called incompetence is actually a symptom of the malice, because they're fumbling now all the time because they're so desperate, they're being careless.
What about the head of the Secret Service? He said, "Well, no, we didn't have someone on the roof of that building because it was
too steep.
It was a slopey roof, and it could have been dangerous." And no reporter said, "Well, what about the snipers on the buildings behind Trump? Those were slope roofs too, and they had guys up there."
Exactly.
And they were at a steeper angle than where the shooting was.
Yeah, a steeper angle.
But the female, and this isn't about female Secret Service guards per se, this is about these four that were there. They were all a lot shorter than Trump, mm-hmm. right? And if you looked at the Trump walking into the RNC conference, and his new security detail, they're all like 6'4", 6'5" guys.
Yeah, I know that.
And they've got shoulders that are, you know, the width of two axe handles. There's been a significant change in the security. But if you're going to have a conspiracy and you're going to go and get Trump, wouldn't you get the guy who can actually shoot straight?
He did shoot straight, but it's just that at that moment, as even Trump has said, he turned to look at some statistics on illegal immigration and turned his head at that moment, and it was an act of God. And you can see it when Trump walked into that Republican National Convention in Milwaukee the other day. He was a changed man. You could see the look on his face. He was humble.
I just want to say he wasn't humble. He was wounded.
Mm. Okay, well, whatever.
Yeah. There's a big difference. It's like stuff humility. You don't humble yourself before evil.
I think what I mean by that is he accepted his own of what it was for him. I think he realized how lucky he was.
He does. Yeah,
intimations with mortality do have a huge effect on somebody.
This is all sounding a bit worshipy, I got to say. Mm. We've got to keep a clear head on this, don't we? I mean, this could be part of the show as well. We got to keep that open.
What do you mean?
Well, suddenly everybody's treating him like a god. And that's dangerous, potentially.
Well, if there were ever a demigod, he's one.
See, you there.
But there's nothing wrong with hero worship when you truly do see a hero. There's nothing wrong with that.
I'm not convinced.
That's what 19th century literature is all about. You should... I don't mean worship as in grovel. I mean honor and have reverence for. That's what I mean. It's not a grovelly thing.
It's not the second coming.
It's not the second coming, but he realized how lucky he was.
Oh, I'm sure he didn't.
His brains would have been splattered all over that.
He realized too that despite the best efforts of everybody around him, he was still a target. Right, and if that was their best evidence, it wasn't good enough. I mean, the Secret Service is designed to stop things like that ever happening. Now, Ronald Reagan was shot in the stomach, and when you saw how the Secret Service reacted with that, out with their Uzis, one guy even had an M60 machine gun, belt-fed machine gun, come out of nowhere. I don't know where he was hiding it, but there it was. There's a big difference in the way that they acted and reacted around that. But getting it back to reality, when Ronald Reagan was shot in the stomach, the polls that came out after that, he took a 22-point bump up in the polls. So we haven't seen any poll numbers. We've seen the betting markets, and Biden's stocks have crashed through the floor. But when we start seeing the polls, and the polls start coming out and showing that in some of these swing states, now that Trump's well in front, then Biden's finished.
And Elon Musk kicking $45 million a month into
and
the...
And Bernie Sanders is very upset about that, well, of he would course. Be.
He'd be talking like that. But that's to the Political Action Committee. $45 million a month, that's massive.
That's right. Musk has gone from March saying he wouldn't commit any money to any presidential candidate to $45 million. That's nine figures between now and the election.
Because he can.
Well, yeah, that's right. You're seeing a split now in the tech oligarchs, and you're seeing people like Musk and a whole lot of others. I saw a list on X the other day. Some of them I didn't recognize who they were, but Peter Thiel was in there, and he's biffing in millions of dollars too.
I don't know if he's contributing to Vance now, but I know that he did contribute to Vance's campaign, J.D. Vance's campaign in 2022 to make him a senator.
You've got the Winklevoss twins, you know, of Facebook fame. You've got Palantir Technologies co-founder John Lonsdale. I mean, all these guys are very, very wealthy people, and they're coming across because of Musk. He's the one who's bringing them through. And it is a split in that Silicon Valley, you know, as you say, Cam, you know, the tech oligarchy. Because even though Facebook has allowed Trump back on, they are going to monitor him. They're going to keep him cornered and keep him a very narrow place. They're never going to do it. Your Facebooks and your Googles will never support Trump. At the end of the day, it's an extraordinary amount of money to give to the Trump campaign, the Trump pack, you know?
Yeah.
What happens with Uncle Joe?
Well, he's done.
They've got a problem, though, haven't they? All those ballots they've filled in already for him. They're going to have to do something about that.
Yeah, they're going to have to choose another leader, because now that Adam Schiff has come out, and also Chuck Schumer has also asked Biden to step aside, they know that they haven't got a hope in hell of even putting up anything that could even pretend to win an election. Let's face it, because they're all about pretense. Nothing they have could even pretend to win this election.
No, because Trump's a god now. Beat that.
Well, he's not a god, but he's definitely a hero. And I've said this since 2016. I recognize a hero when one's in front of me. And that's where he was in 2016. This whole Save America is not hyperbole. Unless he wins this, America really is over. We've seen that already. We've got Steve Bannon in prison. Peter Navarro has just come out of prison. This is not the way America works. And all the January 6th protesters. When times are crap, you do need heroes to step forward. And Trump has always been that guy. That's why I go like a pit bull at people that criticize him all the time. Sure, he's a politician, but he's not that kind of politician. Say,
Operation Warp Speed.
What do you mean by that?
Well, he was right there for that rollout.
He wasn't right there for the rollout.
Okay, where was he then?
Okay, I'll explain it like this. Trump is not a doctor or scientist. He opened doors to bring about a vaccine that people wanted.
You're
not buying it because you're not listening.
No, but I know all that.
Why don't you let me finish?
The thing is, he was the genius, and he didn't get that one. He didn't catch that one, and people are dead.
If you want a proper conversation, you've got to be prepared to have one. Instead of just cutting me off and going, not buying it.
Well, I'm not buying it.
Trump did not invent the vaccine. He's not a scientist.
He could have stopped it.
He opened doors because of the right to try bill, which he was already extremely proud of, where people dying could have open access to be guinea pigs for things that they wanted.
Mistake.
That was part of the open door toward that thing. But you cannot blame Trump for bringing that vaccine to market.
I think I can blame him for some of it.
He's
not a doctor nor a scientist.
Yeah,
that
argument doesn't fly. He's the last buck stops there. Buck stops there. Yeah,
you have to put the blame on the people that did it. You've got to blame the
he got fooled by them. And if he was a genius, he wouldn't have got fooled.
Yeah, he may have been fooled by it, but you still can't.
Not so smart then, it counts.
Hang on, Paul. When were the vaccines rolled out first? Date.
I can't remember the date.
Well, COVID-19 happened in 2019, right? That's when it started, at the end of 2019. There was an election in the US in 2020. I'm pretty sure that the vaccines didn't start getting rolled out.
Well, that's a technicality. He He let that whole thing run. And
Operation Warp Speed. Trump was not even allowed onto the seventh floor of that building. Do you know he was blocked from actually following it? That's what the
And I know he's done the phone call with Bobby Kennedy.
He was fighting that presidency with one hand tied behind his back. He's not going to come out and say that because he's never going to want to look weak.
And he's been promoting it all this time, and now he's having second thoughts.
Well, that's good. He's changed his mind.
It's too late. Anyway, just saying.
You can't be so emphatic, Paul.
Yes, I can. If I want to be. I'm pissed about this. I'm really pissed about what's happened, okay?
Well, then blame the people that actually did it, Paul. That's what I'm saying. Not don't blame the person that was
trying
to do a million things.
But I can't forget that.
Pressure that we can't even imagine, and with one hand tied behind his back, because there was a war on the Trump presidency all the way through that.
No, I get all that. I was following it. I was a fanboy.
Well, you've got to factor it in then. If you get it, you've got to factor it in. That's what I'm saying. And he was not allowed. That Operation Warp Speed was on the seventh floor of, I can't remember which building, and Trump was not allowed access into that.
Should have rung alarm bells right there.
Well, they were too busy. They were too busy planning to steal an election.
All right. Okay. Do we have anything more to say about that?
No, I've just enjoyed the conversation, Paul.
Yeah. Well, I'm genuinely, people got to pay for this at some point and take responsibility. Even if it's Trump, and even if he dodged a bullet.
But you've got it. But it's also like this, Paul. Too. It's America is over, unless they. If there was another Democrat administration, that country is never going to be the same.
I think it's over anyway.
So you've got to think beyond vaccines, beyond the COVID stuff, because that was all bullshit anyway. I mean, it was a plandemic. It wasn't a pandemic. Trump actually now has to save his country. Really, that means the economy. It means building patriotism in the American people, which he's doing really well and has always been good at, and their way of life. Their actual way of life. That's
too much
what's under
debt.
Threat.
Too much debt.
Yeah. Well, all that.
Yeah.
I'm reluctant to interrupt here.
No, we're done on that.
Olivia is
on
a very good roll because she's quite right. I mean, at the end of the day, if that shooter had succeeded, in my opinion, and shot Trump dead, there would have been a civil war in America very quickly. And America is close to being finished if they do not elect Trump. If the Democrats steal this election, I can guarantee it, America will be at war with itself.
That's quite right. And also remember that if Trump does win the presidency again, and he probably will, but if he does, it is going to be very contentious because of many of the policies that they need to do, like deporting. There's 15 million at the low end of the scale, the guess.
How do you do that?
15 million. Yeah, people need to be deported back to their countries because they're illegal. You imagine what that's going to look like, but it has to be done.
It's extremely difficult when you have sanctuary cities, though, in the US.
Yeah.
We had a guest on, Leslie Manoukian, a couple of days ago, and she said that the US was going to balkanize for sure.
Well, it already is.
Yeah, but, not be the United States anymore.
It's possible, but it would balkanize if Trump doesn't win. If Trump wins again, no state is going to not be a part of the United States. But if the Democrats won again, you can bet your ass that Texas will not be a part of the United States.
Who do you think they'll put up then if old Joe's got COVID? And
it's Kamala.
Oh, come on.
It has. No, I know. Yeah. That's laughable as that is. That's what they're going to do. Heckles Harris.
Oh, dear. All right, Cam, NZSO boss. He's a former ad man, isn't he, that guy? Peter Biggs, I think he is. Saatchi & Saatchi in the early days.
I mean, this is the organisation that goes cap in hand to the government every single year for more money. Please, sir, can we have some more? And they've got this guy there who is on more than $300,000 a year. As their chief executive, Peter Biggs is his name, has an apartment in Wellington. And what does he do? He goes and stays at the Wellington Club and rented out his own city apartment for several months and claimed $5,295 in allowances to stay at the Wellington Club on numerous occasions. So this guy is earning moonbeams, telephone numbers, and yet he still feels a need to dip into the taxpayer's pocket for another $5,000.
The entitlement, eh?
Why do they do it? It's look at Golrez Garaman. She did it. They're stealing petty amounts when they earn big bucks. What is it with these people?
I don't know. What is it with them, Glenn?
I have absolutely no idea, Paul, but I'm just as appalled as Cam on that one. When I saw that story in the Post, I thought, you wanker, right? That was pretty well it.
Owner-operator.
Is he listening? I wonder. Okay.
But here's the thing, right? How many people actually go to the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra to listen? It would be counted in hundreds.
Probably.
Not thousands, right? Hundreds. Just like cancel it. Why? The subsidies on these guys, so they can, imagine the guy who gets wages from the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra to strike the triangle three times in some opus of some sort. You know, this is ridiculous.
Hey, I can do that.
Well, so can Spotify. You want to listen to that rubbish?
No, there's nothing like an orchestra. Come on.
I love the NZ, so. But everything needs to fall to the free market. Big believer in that.
Same with the ballet, that in the symphony orchestra. I've got a personal vendetta against them for no reason other than I don't like it and I don't want to pay for it.
I can't imagine you going to the ballet ever, Cam.
Never.
We could merge the ballet and the orchestra, like a TVNZ, RNZ thing. We could merge them together.
Well, how about just cancel them?
Cancelling.
Defence Force is $130 million short in their budget, so they're sacking their civilian staff, was announced on Thursday. $130 million? Gee, that number rings a bell. That's the same number that
went to the Ukraine.
Gave to the Ukraine.
Oh, hey, good spotting.
Right? But look at the amount of money that the Symphony Orchestra and the New Zealand Ballet have. Cut that, put it to the Defence Force.
Look, the spending for the burearacy is still going ahead. Te Puni Kōkiri, the Ministry for Māori Development, has advertised yesterday or today two jobs to help the ministry deal with the change going on. And each role is between $220,000 and $250,000 a year. And the actual requirements for that job, I think your average gutter rat in Tokyo could do.
Well, no, they're the wrong colour. They have to be brown to be in Te Puni Kōkiri.
It's a bit rich, isn't it? Because here we are all trying to make a living, and you talk about Peter Biggs there, the Wellington Club, and he's got his apartment, he's on 300K or whatever. Glenn, what you've just said, this is just so unfair.
Well, I thought we had a government that was going to cut government spending, that was going to reduce the amount of money that they were going to allocate to the bureaucracy, and that it was going to start slashing numbers and start bringing it back, which is what everyone voted for. And yet you have these individual ministries still going ahead and employing people on exorbitant amounts of money for a job that anyone really, it doesn't require too much experience to deal with, in my opinion.
But the problem is the new government didn't come in and gas
fire everyone.
Gas a few senior civil servants. This is why you're seeing the revelations now coming out about the top end of the health department that were colluding with amongst themselves to stitch up the health minister with false data that supported them retaining some legislation that they personally supported. So you can't believe a word that the Ministry of Health top echelon says to their minister anymore because they've been caught red-handed jimmying up data to support their own personal views.
Like NIWA.
Well, same thing. We need to have legislation that's similar to Australia or indeed the United States, that when there's a change of government, the top echelon of all of these government departments are all sacked, and they are political appointments, because what we have is a politicised civil service. The trouble is it's politicised to hard left and, commie type. Right? So it's already politicised. Let's just get it over and done with, and let's just change the legislation to say the top echelons of all these government departments get replaced with suitable ideological people in those positions.
I'd be into that. I'd
go with that. Because then you truly get a change of administration, don't you? But as it stands, you get a change of administration, so-called in air quotes, you know, administration, but the administration actually doesn't change on all those levels. So, yeah, I'm
public servants, they say they come and they go. I've heard them say that.
Yeah, politicians. They know they just hunker down. We'll just, you know, we'll go to meetings. We'll
ride it out.
We'll ride it out, and then we'll get a government that we believe in. And in the meantime, they leak, which is what the Ministry of Health is doing. They leaked all those documents before it even went to cabinet. And then you had Casey Costello sitting there on the back foot with the top echelon of the Ministry of Health leaking. And it's just happened again. You know, yesterday they had Casey Costello getting machine gunned by Guy and Espiner over a similar sort of a thing. Yep. But the officials say this. The officials have recommended this. Well, so what? Thanks for your recommendation.
Being machine gunned by Guy and Espiner is nothing.
Well, so
I take Cam's point, right? The bureaucracy is one of the major threats to this government because they are fighting against them. Yeah. And who gives a rat's ass what some bureaucrat thinks? They're not in charge. They're not the ones making the decision. It's the Associate Minister of Health and it's the Minister of Health. But they're being forced to do this, or the media are just jumping at these guys, you know, because they're getting leaked information, and it's not right.
Yeah, just start sacking them. That's what
start sacking them.
Ritti and Costello should just get a list of the top 15 people in the Ministry of Health or anyone who had their hands on those documents that leaked, and gas them. That's it.
Immediate dismissal. I'll go with the immediate dismissal, Cam.
They must be pretty butthurt, though, those public servants, because they pretty well had the wheelhouse to themselves last time.
Yeah. They had 6 years of doing whatever they wanted, and it's gone to their head.
Is there any difference between what Jacinda Ardern, this is going to the other topic, but sort of on the same one, between what she would do with the whole Ukraine situation and what and NATO and what Luxon is also doing? There's no difference, is there?
No difference.
None at all.
It's like, I mean, how is he saying, I want to underscore that Ukraine is fighting for democracy and it's something we believe in? And he said, either we stand up for our values in a liberal democracy or we don't. We cannot have Ukraine lose this war. That is unacceptable. And that's why you've seen us continue to support Ukraine, just like Jacinda did.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, Ukraine has never been a great bastion of democracy in anybody's book. They're fighting for a globalist agenda. Zelensky is now actually caught between pressures from NATO to keep the war in play and his own battalions, like Azov battalions, that have threatened his life if he tries to get a peace deal with Russia. And let's not forget, Ukraine has never actually been a NATO ally until this whole war came about. The rules of NATO don't actually allow a country to join if they have disputed borders, let alone have a full-scale war going on. And, you know, Luxon talking about the values of liberal democracy, when he kissed the ass of Jacinda Ardern right through the COVID years with no pushback, you know, our Bill of Rights was made mute. And what did he have to say about that as a principal point of liberal democracy? Absolutely nothing. So he cannot be taken saying this stuff with a straight face.
Part of liberal democracy is this protesters, right? Well, where was he? Oh, that's right, cowering inside behind Jacinda's skirt.
Yeah, behind her skirts. And 600,000 Ukrainian men of fighting age have fled the Ukraine. 600,000.
The average age of the Ukrainian soldier now is 43 years old.
Wow. So, right. I mean, if they refuse to fight for their own country, why should other countries send fighters to do what they don't see themselves as a value?
That's what J.D. Vance said. And he said, if you want your kids to fight in a globalist war, vote for Joe Biden.
Joe Biden.
Luxon must think we're all morons because we all know this. We see it all the time in the media that we look at. And it's out there. We know that. Yet this play act continues.
How long is it going to be before the world admits Ukraine has already lost this war?
I know.
I'll tell you how long it'll be. It'll be until about 12 hours okay. after.
November 3.
Zelensky's a dead man walking, though, isn't he?
It's Zelensky's curse, absolutely. Everyone who aligns with him is a dead man walking, I think. The Conservatives have that. Zelensky
curse, that's right. Uh-huh.
And I, getting back to J.D. Vance, sorry, we're jumping around a little bit here, but I hope that's okay. You know, he was saying that this administration with Biden has made any attempt at proper diplomacy for the next administration almost impossible. Of course, nothing's impossible with Trump, but it's just war, 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 war all the way. Send us weapons, send us money, and it will never be enough for the Ukraine. And unlike Ukraine, Israel is actually a technologically advanced nation, and they're not a dependent ally. They like America's backing, of course, and they rely on America for certain things, but they're allies who advance their own interests, you know. Yeah, ammo and some of the weapons.
Before we move down the Israel route, Olivia, you know, let's just sticking onto NATO at the moment. You had that Washington summit last week. And Zelensky came, they all came, everyone from Europe came. Sir Keir Starmer turned up, and it was, what, his first multilateral meeting that he'd gone to since he was elected. You had Emmanuel Macron turn up, Jens Stoltenberg, the outgoing Secretary General of NATO. You had Mark Rutte, the former Dutch Prime Minister, turn up.
Well, he still is Prime Minister, isn't he?
Is he still Prime Minister?
Yeah, he's acting Prime Minister. He's going to be the
new Secretary General, right, of NATO. And Viktor Orban. And Viktor Orban has just finished what I would say would be a very effective beginnings of a peace.
Exactly.
Negotiation between Ukraine and Moscow. He went to Kiev. He then flew straight to Moscow. He then flew from Moscow to China. He went from China to the NATO summit. And then he went from the NATO summit down to Florida to Mar-a-Lago to meet with Trump. Now, this guy, I think, is going to be a very significant figure moving forward on that peace process with Ukraine. But the thing about the NATO summit in Washington is that they didn't even address the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room was the fact that a week earlier, or a few days earlier, you'd had Biden in a catastrophic presidential debate on TV where everyone could see the man had completely lost his mind. And then they were all at the NATO summit. And the Ukraine war, the Israel-Palestinian conflict were all on the main topics of that meeting. And yet NATO knew that Biden is toast, Trump is coming in, and NATO is under threat for its existence.
Luxon should know that too.
I was just going to say that. Exactly. Where's Luxon in all of that?
And then he's shaking hands with Larry Fink.
And Gavin Newsom.
And who else, PM of ours, visited them?
But Glenn, America is subsidizing the Europeans to do nothing, aren't they? And that's always been Trump's point since 2015, when he started talking about NATO. Remember the big speeches he would say, we're going to rethink NATO, and everyone freaked. But yeah, he was always right.
Yeah, I'm going to rethink giving you money, is what he was saying.
Yeah, well, and I think he'd go further as well, because although that's a great starting point, but, you know, Europe is deindustrializing their own countries in the name of green energy policy. And at the same time, not only are they buying gas still from Putin, around the sanctions through other ways, backdoor ways, they're complaining that Putin needs to be stopped and expecting America to give them aid, weapons, manpower, all through NATO. I mean, it's an absolute recipe for disaster. And, you know.
Yeah. Hey, Cam, you know Winston pretty well, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've asked him on this program about Ukraine, and he keeps giving the stock standard answer. They made deals in 1990 and they've come and they've invaded and aggressive. Doesn't take account of any of kind of the detail around the Minsk Accords and the deal that was nearly made in Turkey. He keeps saying the same thing. He can't be that much in a blind spot, can he?
I'll say the same thing that I say every time somebody asks me when they've asked a politician something they didn't get an answer that they wanted, is that do you really think they know everything about their portfolio, because they don't. They're politicians, right? They rely on the advice of officials.
So I know more than him.
Probably.
Very good chance that you do.
And you're the foreign minister, and you're committing over $100 million of our money.
Here I will disagree with Kent.
No, hang on a second. I'm just going to address that point there from, yes, you probably do know more than Winston. Winston, though, is really, really well briefed, but there's the problem, right? He's briefed, and you have to ask by whom, because it's the briefings that matter. It's the same reason why we still have an embassy for Israel in Ankara in Turkey, right? Because the foreign affairs officials go, oh, no, we can't have an embassy in Jerusalem or Tel Aviv. No, we'll just stay with Ankara. And you get the advice that's coming from these wombles in foreign affairs. And it's the same with any portfolio. Unless you're on top of your game and you are actually an expert in that subject matter, then the officials are literally got their fingers up the noses of the politicians and they're dragging them around by their noses.
If I hear anyone say rules-based order again,
That is true. I agree with you on that point, Cam. What I don't agree with is that Winston isn't... I think Winston, like a lot of people, must know Ukraine is losing this war. They must know the facts that Russia is advancing forward. And we can go back to 1989 with the fall of the Berlin Wall and debate what was agreed around that time. But the fact of the matter is for New Zealand is that we are tied into ANZUS, we are into the Five Eyes, we are tied in with the US. And you can imagine when Winston and Blinken met, and I don't know, I'm just guessing, but when they met last year or whenever it was earlier this year, Blinken would have pointed to him and said, you can have security or trade, which is it going to be? And you choose, you make a choice now. And we are still bound by those 80 years of alliances that we've had since.
I don't think they can give us security. They're bumbling.
And you're probably right at this stage because they're crumbling, right? But
yeah.
But still, we are caught between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, Glenn raised a really good point there. New Zealand, you know, contrary to what the media think and what politicians think, New Zealand is literally rounding figures in any calculation that you have on anything in the world. The only exception to that is in intelligence, and we've got a big part to play there because of Five Eyes. But the reality is, we need everybody else more than they need us, right? So and then, right, you've got collective cabinet responsibility. So whilst Winston might well be up with the play and privately think, well, this is a dead dog, as long as you've got people like Luxon and Chris Bishop and other wet liberals in the National Party, which is the majority party, and they're sitting around the cabinet table, whatever the cabinet decides, Winston has to do. And people forget that, right? We've got a coalition government and then there's a collective cabinet responsibility. So whatever the cabinet decides, even if they fight their corner and disagree on something, they have to go
on. I get that.
So,
all right.
And here's the ridiculous thing was after Luxon hosted the Indo 4 at NATO, which was what? Just a chat between four members who aren't part of NATO. He comes out to the media and he says, we could have a Ukraine and New Zealand anytime at all. And of course, that's a spur on China. Well, that's China. He's saying that China could come and invade us anytime. That's what it must be in reference to. And that's show the ridiculousness of these statements.
That's dangerous to say that when we rely on their trade, isn't it?
You would think so.
Am I missing something?
I guess the thing that makes me so angry at NATO with this whole thing is that they've tried to do to Russia, abjectly failed, but they wanted regime change there.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, it was all about regime change. They wanted,
and they thought they could pull it off.
Yeah, well, because they have managed to pull it off, haven't they, in other countries and stuff. They have to stop doing that, regime change stuff in other countries. They must. And that's another thing that I believe that when Trump says we need to rethink NATO, as he said since 2015, I think that's part of it, because when you've got an American first agenda, which is Trump policy, Trump doctrine is principled realism, that's America first, and all decisions have to feed into America first. He's not going to interfere or intervene in other countries' regimes. He's not. And that is principled realism.
And when Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger went into and opened up China to the US, Nixon said at the time, "I hope we haven't created a monster." And he's quite right. That is what happened. Mm. And now, as somebody else has said, and I forget who, it was a comment that, "God forbid you bring Russia and China together." That's exactly what Biden has done.
Well, I mean, you got to remember, they share a border, a huge border. Russia and China have always...
And they've had skirmishes on that border.
They have, but it's natural that Russia and China have close diplomacy given that border.
Yeah, but as a force, an opposing force together, that's it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, if the West are against them...
In fact, we'd probably lose that one.
Try and do regime changes, then you will.
Wouldn't you say? We'd lose that one, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Of course we would. They've got hypersonic missiles. Let's go real local. Tauranga City Council cocktail party. Withholding of guest list. Referred to the ombudsman. Here we go. More entitled. Spend up large.
Well, Cam? Entitled officials as well, that somebody's asked a question using presumably the Local Government and Official Information Act. And the council officers are sitting there going, well, they don't know whether they're for it or against it. There's arguments and emails going on. You've got senior staff saying, oh, no, we can't release who attended this, citing privacy and a limited public interest, given the cost that didn't fall on ratepayers. But another council staff member highlights the high public interest in releasing the guest list. So which is it? You know, which one is it here? And so they're not releasing the information, which makes you wonder why. I mean, as soon as you get an OIA request and it comes back full of redactions, the first question you ask is why? What are they hiding?
Were they hosting certain local businessmen?
Well, there was a property development company.
Property developers, yeah.
One was, City Partners. But it just looks dirty. It looks murky. It smells off. And it cost $40,000.
I was going to say 40K there.
$40,000. Now, it's not what we've got here is a city council that has commissioners in place. And the council seems to be doing whatever it wants because it hasn't got councillors that are doing, Ann Tolley's sitting there rubber stamping everything.
Election's tomorrow, by the way.
Yeah. And now we've got this. Oh, no, we can't have that come out. And you may be sure it's because of the election that they're not releasing it, but they can't say that because it's not a valid reason to not give information under the Official Information Act or the Local Government and Official Meetings and Official Information Act. So it just looks murky. It looks like you can't trust the civil servants in the council. Well, it just stinks. It really does.
Gosh, it's everywhere, isn't it?
Well, it's because we let it happen, because nobody says, hang on a minute, this is bullshit. We don't have this filter where we say, thanks for your explanation there. Sounds like bullshit to me. We don't do that. We're all polite and go, okay then. That explains it.
I suppose there's a good reason for it.
Hanlon's razor.
Yeah. All right, we're coming up against time. What's this John Deere stuff about, Glenn?
I saw this today. So we all know who John Deere is, the Deere company, which
tractors
produces agriculture machinery. That's right.
Green tractors. They're the only green tractor company in the world.
it was an interesting statement that they came out with the other day that said that they were they'd made a commitment that they would be putting no more investment into events that were parades and events So you're not going to see a John Deere float in a pride parade with men dressed in drag. They said they were auditing their training manuals to remove all socially motivated messages, and that they'd reaffirmed that the policy of the company is that they do not support diversity quotas nor pronoun identification. So there won't be any more him, hers, or she, hims, they, thems at the John Deere company. And look, the reason I think this is interesting, because you saw it with Microsoft as well, they have finished completely with their DEI hiring. They're not going to do that anymore.
Wow.
And this is demonstrative, in my opinion, of the realization that the Democrats are gone, Trump is coming in, the Republicans are coming in, and people are just moving with that and getting rid of all that rubbish. Yeah. And so hopefully we can see a lot of people around the world start waking up to this stuff.
Yep.
ESG, get rid of ESG.
Woke is dying, isn't it, Glenn?
Let's hope it is, Olivia. Yeah,
it is.
Any sign of it dying here?
Well, I just want to mention while we're on this, you know, we've been in a culture war for a long time. I mean, ever since I've been blogging and before, so let's go back 20 years, we've been in quite a vicious culture war, and conservatives have been losing that war until recently. And I think 2020, the stolen election in the United States and everything that happened there, that's when Americans realized that they can't rely on Trump or a president to fight all their battles. They have to join the school boards and fight what's taught their children in the curriculum. They have to be involved in the culture war. And we've seen that here with, you know, the whole pushback against rainbow stuff from Brian Tamaki and everyone involved in that sort of thing. We can't expect people to fight for our democracies. We, as the citizens of those democracies, actually have to fight it. And we have been. Same with after the COVID mandates and our big protest. So the whole, I don't want a revolution. I've said this many times. I'm not looking for revolution. I don't actually like that language. We do not have the moral leaders to fight a decent revolution. What we need is a restoration to the decent institutions that were actually part of our heritage. They got infected and taken over, and we need to take them back. And that's a restoration. It's not a revolution. You know, and getting back to America, because it's the greatest example of democracy and the most powerful democracy. I mean, everything we learned about democracy, we got from that nation. It was founded in a Christian country using very deistic language. That language was from John Locke, Algernon Sidney, and actually a lot of it was from Cicero in his time in the Roman Republic. Remember, Cicero lived to see them lose their republic before he was executed. It broke his heart. And the Bible thumpers are part of that tapestry too, although I find that approach a little bit too limited for my own sensibilities. But deism, I give a lot of credit to. And but Christian culture gave birth to the Enlightenment, and the Enlightenment gave birth to America, which became authored into existence officially in 1776. So that's what I want to say.
I've got something here from the Bible. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. One of the heads of the beast seemed to have a fatal wound, but the fatal wound had been healed. The whole world was filled with wonder and followed the beast. Revelation 13:13. What a coincidence.
Oh, Paul, you're getting all worshipy now.
No, I'm not. I'm just pointing it out.
Anti-worshipy.
It's just another fascinating dimension.
Oh, dear. I'm not one for prophecy myself. What I say whatever to that kind of thing, but good luck. You know,
I just reckon, you know, we should make testosterone great again.
I'm up for that.
Well, no one's got bigger nuts than Trump, so balls of steel. So I think it's been done as we speak.
You were talking about pronouns in the culture wars, and the joke that was going around on X about crooks was his pronouns were was and were.
Yeah. He had the classic look, though, of a deranged leftard. Right? He had he was central casting on that.
Funny looking.
Why is that?
Maybe they're a type.
He had a Habsburg chin. That didn't help.
No, I mean, did you hear about the neurodivergent knife fight?
No.
They slashed them.
On that note, I think we'll call time on our political panel. I still love you, Olivia. I wasn't having a go at you.
No, it's all right. Before. It's all okay, Paul. If it's free ideas and discussion.
Just in case.
You just, you know, you got to have my testy responses now and then.
Someone will be saying that nasty, impolite man treating her like that.
We'll get feedback saying, why does Olivia care so much about American politics and Trump's, you know, the Antichrist? But, you know, stuff them, I say.
All right. Thank you, Olivia. Thank you, Cam.
Welcome.
And Glenn Inwood. Thank you, Glenn.
My pleasure.
See you next time.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.